In 3, 2, 1.
Let's face it, life can be difficult and full of challenges. My guest today is on a mission to empower individuals to rise above their challenges personally and professionally and create lasting impact. His message, "Don't let your struggle become your standard," has touched the hearts of many and continues to ignite hope and determination in those who hear it. In this episode, you will learn how to become indispensable, even when the odds seem insurmountable. Whatever your role is in life, my guest's wisdom and insights will resonate with you and inspire you to elevate your game. Please join me for my conversation with author and speaker, Jose Flores.
Well, hi, Jose. Welcome to the program. We're glad to have you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me and letting me hang out with you and your audience today, Mike.
No, it's exciting to have you. Now, where are we speaking to you from today?
I'm in sunny South Florida in the Miami area.
Nice. Lovely. I'm talking to you from our studio up in Canada. We're delighted to have you. I'm really excited about meeting you and sharing with you. You've got lots of things to talk about, lots of stories to talk about. But so we get into it a little bit, and we're going to talk about your book, because I know you've got a best-selling book and you've done really well with that. But you've done some special things and have achieved some special things. So let's give a little bit of a background for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. Thank you again for the opportunities. Most people see me, they see me in a wheelchair, and that's due to a neuromuscular condition that I was born with called spinal muscular atrophy. And basically what that does is the older I get, the weaker my muscles get. I got diagnosed at the age of 3, and the doctors told my parents that I'd be in a wheelchair by the age of 15, and they weren't even expecting me to live past my teenage years. But I have good news for everyone, because I'll be celebrating my 47th birthday. So that's really exciting, and obviously, and compared to what the doctors were saying. And I actually didn't end up in a wheelchair until I was 22. So everything the doctors told me, obviously, didn't come true. I'm still fighting, still pushing, still kicking life's butt. And it's all because of the mindset that I've been able to develop over the years. You know, when I was younger, I lived a normal childhood. I was able to walk and run and ride bike and do all of the things that healthy young boys do. And so as I got older, there's 4 types of the SMA. The first 2 types, type 1 and 2, are the more severe types, if you would. And then type 3 and 4 are what they would call non-life-threatening types of the condition. So I have type 3. That's why I was able to walk until I was 22. And that's why I'm going to be 47, because it doesn't affect your lifespan. With that being said, back in the days when I was born in the 70s, there wasn't really a whole lot of information about SMA. But today, they have treatments and therapies that are out there and available that are specific to SMA. And so I'm on a treatment now. Thank God that I just got FDA approved in 2020 during COVID. I started it at the end of 2022. And so March of this year, I'll be on it for 2 years. So basically what the therapy does, what the medication does, is it causes one of the genes that we have that produces the protein that allows the muscles to stay strong and develop and keep you moving. It causes that specific gene to produce more protein. So the protein that my body is lacking, it causes that gene to produce more protein. And so we can get into all the science about it, but I'm pretty sure I don't know if you have an audience that likes that type of stuff, but they can always reach out to me if they have questions. But what it does is it produces more protein, which in essence stops the disease from progressing. So it's not a cure. I'm not getting any stronger, but I'm not getting any weaker either, which is a plus for the SMA community. And that's one of the drugs I'm on. There's currently 3 FDA approved drugs that are out there. And it's amazing, because a lot of the type 1 and 2s who have SMA, the people who have SMA, if you had type 1, you probably weren't surviving past the age of 1. And so nowadays, today, these young kids that have type 1, they are able to reach milestones as far as sitting up on their own, crawling, walking, and some of them are even running, and they're 4, 5, 6 years old, these kids. So it's a miracle, right? And so, you know, going through all of that, that's just a little bit about the SMA, but going through all of that, growing up in my childhood, I was born and raised in the Bronx, New York, the majority of my life, and then I moved to Florida in 2000. But in high school was when I really started to feel this condition start taking its toll on my body. That's when it started to become more difficult for me to just do basic things like bend over to tie my shoe, bend over to pull my pants up, pick my arms up above my head, to put my shirt on, go from a seating position to a standing position. Like those type of things started to become very difficult for me. So that was like when it was like, whoa, like this thing is really starting to kick in. And it kind of messed with me a little bit mentally, because I'm like, you know, what's this disease going to do to me? How severely is it going to affect me? And through my whole high school years, I tried to keep a positive attitude, even though my body was going through these changes. I really didn't try to express it to a lot of people. I didn't want people to treat me differently. I didn't want people to look at me differently. So I kind of tried to keep it hidden for as long as I could. But obviously, once it started getting weaker, I started having a little limp in my walk. So people would notice that there was something a little different about me. And then at the age of 22, when I moved to Florida, that's when I ended up in the wheelchair. But I was on disability checks for a couple of years until I've quickly figured out, you know, who the heck can live off of a measly $863 a month. And so that's what triggered me to go out into the work field and get a job. And I've been in corporate America I have a 20-year corporate America background. And then in 2018 was when I spread my wings and started my entrepreneurial journey of becoming one of the top corporate speakers in the United States.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely amazing. And when you see the adversity, people can circle the wagons and deal with it. You've taken something that's just awful and then turned it into something. Now, you wrote in your book, Don't Let Your Struggle Become Your Standard, which is highly motivational. What's the core message you hope readers take away from that?
It's exactly what the title says. In life, we're all going to go through struggles. My specific one, it happens to be that I'm in a wheelchair and I have to deal with everything that comes along with the wheelchair life. You've been through struggles, right? Everybody goes through their struggle. And it doesn't mean that one struggle is more or less than any other struggle, because at the end of the day, a struggle is a struggle. And it's how we deal with those struggles that dictates how we move forward or not move forward. If we stay stuck in the situation or circumstance or the struggle, and we decide to just park right there and become comfortable and make that our comfort zone. Some people do that as well. So my whole objective by writing the book was to show people that regardless of what life throws your way, my deck of cards included a wheelchair, but some other people may have depression or low self-esteem, anxiety. The list can go on and on about invisible struggles that people can't see. Everyone has their weakness, and it's how you're able to turn those weaknesses into wings that really determine what your future is going to look like. And so I had two options. I could either mope around and be depressed and feel sorry for myself in the wheelchair, or I could just change my mindset, have a positive mental attitude, have an attitude of gratitude, and look at the glass half full and go out there and get everything I want in life. And those were the two options I had. So I chose the latter, because you're either going to be positive or you're going to be negative about whatever situation or circumstance you're in. So I'd rather be positive about it, get out there, smile, experience life, explore the world, impact lives, and make income while I'm doing it, instead of just sitting at my home, just Netflixing and chilling and rotting away at my house, you know?
Right. No, it makes sense. And as a mindset disruptor, because that's a good title for you there, what are some of the common mental barriers that you see holding people back from their success or dealing with their issues? And how do you advise them to overcome those mindset blockages, if you will?
Absolutely. Well, the number one thing that holds people back is fear. And we all heard the acronym is fear is false evidence of being real. And so a lot of times people, they disqualify themselves, they beat themselves up, and they become self-defeated in their mind without even giving it a shot, without even giving it a try. And so again, part of my message is to just go for it, right? Sometimes you got to jump, and it's okay to jump afraid. You can still jump being afraid. It's almost like skydiving, right? If you ever been skydiving for the first time, you're afraid. It's scary. You're 10,000 feet in the air or whatever, 3,000, 5,000 feet in the air, and you're jumping for the first time, but you jump. And then once you jump one time and you experience like, wow, this isn't too bad, it's actually a little fun, then you learn how to continue jumping. And so I just try to show people, like, just go for it, you know? And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then you go back to the drawing board and figure something else out.
That's really the right approach to it. The skydiving analogy is a good one. I had a chance to do that myself. When you jump out of that airplane, I'm a pilot, and we have a rule, never jump out of a perfectly good airplane. But when you jump out and you're willing to accept the fact that, hey, this chute just might not open, and you overcome that anyway, it really does set you up for things. And the fears can be small fears or big fears, right? Like simple things. Like I remember just the podcast, even. For years, we thought about doing this as a podcast, but I've always got, who's going to listen to this? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do it? Then once we did the first few episodes, it was like, why did we wait so long? And you dedicate the first three chapters of your book, you really kind of focus on this. Chapter one, you talk about how to live and be indispensable now, regardless of where you are. And it's really, how do you live? Because most of us aren't living, right? Chapter two, you recognize and realize your uniqueness. We're all unique individuals. And we live in a great time. We have a time where we have medicines. We have whatever your physical ailment, whether it's a mental ailment, there's help there. There's people to support us, people to help us, and then believing in the impossible. And it's identifying that impossible. So you cover a lot of it. That's a lot of details in your book. And then we move on to purpose and potential and some of those things. So in your work and in your corporate workshops, you address what we call indispensable leadership. Define what that means and why it's essential in today's business world. How does it relate to us here?
Absolutely. The reason I came up with Indispensable, first of all, that's the name of my company. The name of my company is called Indispensable Now. And the reason I came up with that is because indispensable by definition means being absolutely necessary, very important, and non-replaceable. And so the angle that I come into with that when I'm speaking to corporate America, a lot of times when you hear the word indispensable in corporate America, you hear things like no one is indispensable. Everyone is replaceable, right? And so the way I come at it is that it's like you're right and you're wrong, right? So the right part is that everyone is replaceable as far as their title or their position is concerned. Every title or position is replaceable, but the individual is not. The individual person is not, because there can never be another Mike but you. There can never be another Jose but me. There's only one of us. So as an individual, as a person with our own set of skills, talents, and abilities and giftings, there can only be one of us. And so what I try to show corporate America, and I try to change the mindset, right? Like through change management, how do you change your mindset to become that indispensable leader that we all are? Because in some area or another in our lives, we are leading someone or a group of people. Maybe sometimes it's intentionally, sometimes it's unintentionally, but we are leading someone at some point of our lives. We have influence. And right. So when you can get an organization's team to understand that they're indispensable, not as far as the title or the position, but as far as, you know what, this organization does need my skill set. They do need my talents. They do need my gifts to help move the needle forward. And you can teach an employee how to have that kind of like entrepreneurial mindset that we hear a lot about. Right. It's like, how can I think like an owner? How can I be an owner? So not only am I teaching corporate employees how to develop that entrepreneurial mindset, but I'm also teaching the employers, how can you empower your team to be more leaders, to function more in a leadership role and position, and to give them the authorization and the tools that they need to make decisions to a certain extent, right?
Sure.
I remember working for some companies where for every little thing, you had to contact another supervisor or a manager to override this or over that, which it takes time, it takes effort, it takes energy. And at the end of the day, the person on the phone call is waiting through that whole process. But if you can have an organization, which I worked for when I was employed through in corporate America with my last job, they gave us the freedom to make decisions. Like they gave us the training, they gave us the tools, they gave us the resources, and was like, now you can make these decisions. And we had a threshold, right? So if it was like maybe compensating a customer from $0 to $150, we had that authorization. If it was more than that, then we had to get approval. But at least they empowered us to make those smaller decision-making processes that we didn't have to have the end user on the line for an extensive period of time. So when you can teach those type of things to corporate America and organizations, and it doesn't have to be major Fortune 50 or 100 companies, it can be a small mom and pop shop that maybe has a team of 5 to 10 employees, and they just want to be efficient and proficient. How can we make it happen so that we can utilize the time that we have more effectively? And so when you start to teach those things to these individuals, it makes a huge difference for the end result for most companies.
Yeah, like you said, it's that empowering. I always remember the story of a Marriott chambermaid has a budget in which they can solve a client's problems. Somebody who's staying at the property, that's a chambermaid. Somebody who's looking after things. For always saying yes, why not just give boundaries, if you will, where our team can operate? So I think that makes good leadership. You talk about mindset a lot and disrupting mindsets, because people get into that factory mindset, right? They're just showing up and working. Did you always have that positive mindset, like when things started happening for you, or were you already on a path of motivation? Were you already on a path of getting inspired? What was it? Was it like a bolt of lightning for you, or you were already on a path and then that helped you evolve into where you are today? And how was it for you?
So for me, I've always been positive. I've always been a positive, encouraging, inspiring individual. That's one of my giftings, right? And but I've always, even at a young age, I used to DJ, and you know, some of the people in your audience might relate to this, some may not, but I used to DJ and I used to make mixtapes back when we had cassette tapes. And so I used to DJ at our parties. I used to make my mixtapes and sell them in high school. So I've always had that entrepreneurial little side hustle type of thing going on from 14 years old. And it kind of just stuck with me. But even in those times of darkness and of difficulty, when SMA really started to take its toll on my body, I'm human, right? I went through little mild, short spurts of depression, like feeling sorry for myself. Like, why is this happening to me? Why do I have to go through this? That whole type of mindset. But it never lasted. I never stayed stuck in that state of being and thinking. And so I was able to snap out of those moments very quickly. And I try to show people, like, how do you do that? And it's because I've always, this is another thing I've always practiced, and it may sound cliche because we hear it all the time, but I've always been grateful for the things that I've had and the abilities that I've been able to still maintain, because you just got to look around a little bit and you see that there's a lot more people that are a lot worse off than where you are now. And even just recently, I went to one of the Cure SMA conferences and I saw all of these families and young people literally in beds with trachs in their necks, and they're living, but it's a very different way of living than what I'm accustomed to. So just looking at that alone makes me grateful that I don't have to go through what they're going through, and many other people, right? That's just one example. But when you have an attitude of gratitude, when you wake up every morning, like for example, Mike, when I used to wake up, when I first wound up in a wheelchair, I would wake up and look into the wheelchair and really resent it. I would dread it. I would thinking like, man, I have to get into that thing again. And that was for a couple of years until I started realizing, well, if it wasn't for that thing, then I'd be stuck in my bed, like many people are in other countries,
right,
third world countries that don't have wheelchairs. So I started to become more grateful for the technology and the pieces of equipment that were available to me here in the United States that allowed me to be more independent. And so again, that mindset disruptor name that I coined myself is because the same way SMA, I was born with SMA in my body, and just one little thing that was lacking from my body, because what causes SMA is that I was born without the survival motor neuron number one, because we have two. Every human has two survival motor neurons. One is the main one, two is the backup one. I was born with zero copies of that survival motor neuron one, which produces about 90% of the protein that our muscles need to function properly. So one thing, just one, I was born without that one gene, and it causes a whole disruption in my body. It causes a disruption in my lifestyle. It causes a disruption in my family, and it causes me to live a different type of lifestyle. So the same way that disrupted my body, I said, well, you know what? I'm going to figure out a way to not only disrupt my own mind and my own way of thinking. I like to call it stinking thinking that I was living with for so many years. How can I change my mind? But then how can I help other people change their minds as well with whatever situation or circumstance they may be going through? And so my story and my skills and my talents are useful for many people. Maybe it's not going to work on everybody. It's been working on a lot of people since I've been doing this for the last 8 years. And so I know that what I'm doing is working. And again, when you have that mindset that you don't have to help and fix everybody, but if you just help and fix a couple, then that's a job well done and it's a job worth continuing.
On this leading by example, and I think you said it well, with gratitude and having that attitude of gratitude and appreciation makes us appreciate things. It's hearing your story and following your story. It's, oh yeah, I wouldn't want that. I've had my own issue in the middle of the pandemic. We're professional speakers. You know how it is. We all lost our gigs. The money went away. We all got fired overnight. So we had to develop, we had to pivot, we had to start doing remote things, we had to come up with things. And that's just us. And we don't have much to complain about. Let's say you didn't have that condition though. Let's go back into those teenage years prior to symptoms showing up. And so you had a positive attitude in life in general. So you kind of had that. Where would you have been had that condition up? Would you be where you are today?
Probably not, Mike, because like I said, I was born and raised in the Bronx, New York, which is not the most ideal place to live on the planet. So it's almost like they call it the concrete jungle, right? So it's almost like a lot of people become a product of their environment. So the type of people that were in my neighborhood, the type of things they were doing were not the things that you would want to do long term to become successful in life. And putting that all into perspective, I'm glad that I moved from New York to Florida when I did, because that was a pivotal change in my life. Not only was it a time where my body was going through a transition, but I was exposed to a new environment that was not like the environment that I came from. It was more peaceful, more quiet, a little more slow pace. But I always had that New York tick, like we got to keep it moving. We got to get moving. We got to do it. We got to get this done. So I always have that New York tick inside of me, but I'm in a more peaceful, calm environment. And so, you know, they always say you're a product of your environment. And that's somewhat true, but it's also somewhat not true, because at the end of the day, we all make the choice of what we want to do, right? We make the decisions on a daily basis. So we can choose and decide to do these things, or we can choose and decide not to do these things. And so I made a choice, man. I was like, you know what? I'm glad I got out when I could. I was in my early 20s and I'm still trying to figure life out, but I'm glad I made the move, because that allowed me to get into the whole personal development journey of using my gift of being encouraging and motivating and inspiring, and really just kind of fine-tune that and sharpen those skills. And I moved to to Florida, and that's when I went to an event and met the great Les Brown that we were speaking about pre this podcast. And he became my mentor. He became my coach. He wrote the foreword to my number one best-selling book, Don't Let Your Struggle Become Your Standard. And then right before COVID in 2019, I went on a 26-city tour with him, and that was a dream come true. And after that, man, I took off like a rocket, and it opened up some doors of opportunity for me. And just being able to shadow him and learn from one of the masters of storytelling that we have in our generation, he's like a living legend. And just to be able to shadow him and be coached by him, be mentored by him, and he's just like a wealth and plethora of information, it was just a dream come true. Because when you mention Les Brown, you cannot mention motivational speaking and motivational industry without mentioning Les Brown as one of the greats to ever do it. So
he's like the father of it. Like, he's been around a long time. Well, no, that's exciting. And as a motivator, and like I say, they show up, and how you handle that adversity, we all are faced with different challenges. Life is like that. And sometimes it can be unbearable. And sometimes it's okay, I think, to throw in the towel too. So sometimes if that works for you, but if you even have that glimmer of, hey, there might be some life on the other side of this, or what can be learned here, what life's lessons.
This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company.
And now back to my conversation with Jose Flores. You've been called a global motivator, and your story's inspiring for sure. Can you give us any examples or an experience where you've seen your work have a positive impact and change the outcome of people? I know you've had feedback over the last number of years, and there's lots of great testimonials, but anything come to mind as far as, hey, I was at an event delivering my message, and I heard from this person at another time or at a later date or something where your story had impact and changed their life?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I have two of them right off the bat that come to mind. So one of them, I was speaking at a college here in South Florida. And after the presentation, you always try to leave that room for Q&A. And right. Some people ask questions, and then some of the introverts don't ask the questions. They wait till after the event to approach you, like kind of one-on-one, and then they'll ask a question. So this young girl approached me and was telling me how she was in college. She wanted to become a neurologist. She wanted to become a neurosurgeon and study neurology, specifically within the neuromuscular industry area. And she was like getting tired. She was like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect it was going to be so much work. It gets so overwhelming and frustrating sometimes. And the demand that's placed upon me is very heavy. And so she was feeling like quitting. And then she came up to me afterwards and shared that with me and said that, but after hearing your story, it motivated me to continue going to school. And then this is what she said, Mike, that really, it made me tear up when she told me. And I tear up even now sometimes when I'm telling a story, is because she said, you know what, Mr. Flores, who knows, maybe I'm the one who is going to find a cure for what you have. And so that really touched me, because I was like, wow, you never know. You can be speaking in an audience, and who knows, maybe she is still on track. I don't know. I didn't keep in touch, but maybe she is still on track. Maybe she is in the labs and testing and studying and researching, and maybe she will come up with a cure. Maybe if it's not for what I have, maybe if it's what somebody else has, but at least it motivated her to stay on track and keep following the vision that she had for herself. So that was one instance where, that was early on in my speaking career also, where the light bulb for me went off, and I was like, wow, this is so powerful what I'm doing, and people need it. And if it was just for that one, then that would have been a great, great job. Yeah, it worked it. So then there was another one where I spoke for one of the largest call center companies in the world. They have major Fortune 50 and 100 companies as clients. So like Google, FedEx, Southwest Airline, UPS, like they had a big conference, and a lot of their executives were at this conference, and it was in Las Vegas. And that was the first time that I was speaking in front of this type of audience. So I was a little intimidated. I was a little nervous. And I was like, because these are the big dogs in the room, right? So I'm speaking, and I got to tell you, man, it was one of the toughest conferences I spoke at, because these guys were looking at me like cold stone killers, man. Like, they weren't showing any emotion. They weren't showing any facial expressions. I'm asking, hey, raise your hand if you, they weren't really engaging and participating. And I'm like, oh, in my head, I'm like, my goodness, this is a tough crowd, right?
I'm bombing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, oh man, they're not relating to me. They're not resonating with me. But afterwards, there were like five or six of those executives that came up to me. And one of them in particular was telling me that he actually was thinking about committing suicide.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because his job was so demanding, and he was the provider for his family. So he felt like this such heavy burden, and he had a wife and he had kids. And the fact that you had a job at an executive level at a Fortune 550 company, and you're having these thoughts of quitting and turning the light switch off, was just mind blowing to me. But it just goes to show you that you never know what people are dealing with. And money is not a factor. This guy was probably well off, very smart, very intelligent, had a family, and he was thinking about quitting like completely. Yeah. And, but he was like, when you shared your story about when you first ended up in a wheelchair and how you had to struggle and get over, and here I am having these thoughts and I can get in and out of bed, get dressed with no problem. He was like, man, you really helped me change my thought pattern about giving up on life, because my kids need me. And because I was sharing how I had dreams of if a woman was ever going to love me like this, or if I was going to ever be able to have kids or own a home or drive a car. And here I am, these basic things were dreams of mine, and he had this, all of this, and taking it for granted. So it kind of was like an eye opener to him. Wow, if this guy's over here in a wheelchair and he's killing it and he's willing to move forward, then why am I thinking the opposite? And so he shared, and he started crying in front of my wife and I and everything. And other people were walking by and he was shedding tears. And it was just like a very powerful emotional moment. And he was thanking me for sharing my story and showing up. And that's why I just keep doing it, man. I keep showing up, Mike, time and time again, because you never know, man. In my short speaking career so far, I've only been doing this. I've had my business for 8 years, but I've been doing it full time for 6 years. And in these 6 years that I've been doing this, there's been like four people that have reached out to me either on social media or in person and have told me that because I showed up that day, they were thinking about killing themselves and committing suicide. And because I showed up and shared my story, it changed their mind. So for those four lives, Mike, caused me to live the way I have to live in a wheelchair, to be able to develop my mindset, to be able to develop my story and have the courage and the bravery to go out there and share my story that's going to help save people's lives. Man, you can't put a price tag on that, man.
No, that's a great story. And I know your wife, Andrea, and you've got a couple of boys, Elijah and Zion, I think, right?
Yeah.
Just the two of them. Good. They're lucky to have you as a dad. Lots of good things in there. You talk about the importance of mental toughness, and everybody goes through their trials. And like you say, sharing the stories, you never know who you're going to impact. So when you speak on the importance of mental toughness, what are some of the daily practices or routines you recommend for strengthening that particular attribute or quality in people?
Absolutely. So there's a couple of things, Mike, and that's a great question. So number one, again, I'm just going to reiterate what I do first thing in the morning is I incorporate an attitude of gratitude. I'm thankful for my wife. I'm thankful for my wheelchair. I'm thankful for my children. I'm thankful that I get to drive a car on my own with a joystick. It's like stuff that you may think that's impossible that's actually happening, right? The things that I dreamed of that I thought I would never have, I have. I'm grateful for those things. That sets me up to win the day because I wake up, I'm excited, I'm fired up, I'm motivated. I get to kiss my wife and speak to my children on a daily basis. And then I'm out there, I get to work. I'm like breaking backs and taking names. You know what I mean? And so that's right off the bat is attitude of gratitude. But then I always tell people that in the morning, my wife or one of my kids have to lift me up out of bed and put me into the wheelchair. But after that, I have to lift myself up mentally to be able to deal with the wheelchair life that I have to. It's a reality in my life that I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so I have to lift myself up mentally. So in the morning, I'm doing my devotionals, I'm reading the word, and then I'm also meditating and breathing, doing some breathing techniques and just kind of getting my body filled with as much oxygen as I possibly can to stimulate my brain. And then after that, you have to be able to have a network of a support team, right? You have some accountability partners, like friends that you really confide in, that you trust, that you can share your struggles with, right? Because we have to have an outlet to be able to share, especially as men, right? Women, they can pour out a river for everyone, right? But men usually have this wall that share. Yeah. But one of the things also is not only the accountability, but you want to be able to increase your level of awareness, right? That helped me out a lot early on because when you have these emotions, when you're going through these disappointments or these discouragements or these times of maybe mild depression or there's a tragedy that happened in your life and you're feeling a certain type of way, you have to have a higher level of awareness to realize, like, first of all, I'm feeling like this, but why am I feeling like this? And how can I rapidly stop feeling like this?
Yeah.
And so again, Les Brown calls me the motivator of motivators, right? Because I motivate him, but I'm also human and I have my days as well where I'm not motivated, where I'm not inspired, where I do want to just stay in bed and feel sorry for myself sometimes. But I have a level of awareness that I know that that can't last. That's not going to be, that's not
the moment.
Exactly. It's like a cancer, I tell people. It's like a cancer and you got to cut it out quick because if not, it spreads rapidly. And so you have to be aware of your emotions and how you're feeling and why you're feeling like that and how can you get out of that? If maybe you can do it on your own because you have your own special techniques, but sometimes you have to speak to someone that you know is going to be able to enlighten you or maybe motivate you or maybe pray for you or maybe give you some words of encouragement so you can snap out of it and keep moving forward. Because at the end of the day, when you have these things that happen in life, they're going to cause two things. They're going to cause you to become stuck. They could cause you to become miserable and bitter and resentful. Or you can use those as learning opportunities, right? You can use those pivotal moments in your life and say, when this happened, because I handled it like this, this was the result. And you want to make sure that what you're thinking is going to produce a positive result. Because the thing is that it's either going to be positive or negative, but the thing is that we get to choose what we want.
In chapter 7 of your book, it's titled Mind Management. Is that what you mean by that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, Cleveland Clinic did a study that says we think 60 to 70,000 thoughts per day. And they went on to say that 85% of those thoughts are negative thoughts. That's almost all, Mike. 85% out of 100, that's almost all. And we are people of habit and routine. So if we're people of habit and routine and 85% of our thoughts are negative, that means that there's an 85% chance that the people that you're coming in contact with are negative people. And we see it all the time. When I was in corporate America, you see it all the time. People who hate their jobs, people who hate coming into work. You know, I was the opposite. I was the one coming in smiling. Hey, good morning. How are you? You look great today. Hey.
Happy to work. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I thought that I would never be able to do anything great in life. I thought that I would never be able to make a difference. I thought that I would never be able to do anything of significance. So the fact that I just had a job and I was a part of a team and a community that people were depending on me to show up to do my part was amazing for me. For maybe some other people, it's like, oh, I hate this. But for somebody like me who can't get a job at the drop of a dime like many people can who are able-bodied, for me, it was amazing. And so, you know, that's why I was with the first company I worked for 10 years where I met my wife. And then the second company I was with for 8 years. And even before that, I was working for like a market research company for 2 years. So I have literally a 20-year corporate America background and I've been able to navigate it. I know all the jargon, there's processes and procedures and metrics and things that employees and employers are looking for and need. And I'm able to speak into that because I have the experience, not only from the corporate background, but I also have the capacity to help you overcome any challenges or struggles or situations or circumstances that may come from a business aspect because I've overcome things in my own personal life. So I like to use my personal experiences of overcoming adversity and challenges and struggles. And how can I bring that into the corporate sector and show employers and employees that if we can work collaboratively, cohesively, supportively, and achievement-driven, we can make amazing things happen. And I use that analogy because that's one of my talks on teamwork. Like my wife and my kids help me to get out of bed and get in the chair and do the things that I need, some of the daily activities that I need. But if it wasn't for us working as a team, my wife would be burned out. One of my kids would be burned out. I would be frustrated. I would be overwhelmed. But when we're able to work as a team and put systems in place and processes in place and schedules in place and everybody's showing up at the right time, it makes life more enjoyable and makes life just a little bit easier. And so how can we bring that into the workforce?
No, you're bang on. Like I say, the power of show up, if we just show up, if we show up as team members. It's like if we use sports as a metaphor, you know, only a few of the players show up, we're not going to win. All right. Exactly. A total team effort and fight through that adversity and go through that, which is one of your messages, actually. And I think you're a good poster child for this message. I know one of the areas that you talk on is diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. And what's funny is in all all things, it becomes political in our world, particularly in America. It's too much of this, too much of that. But DEI and diversity, equity, inclusion, you cross off a lot of bases there. Like a lot of corporations pay lip service to it, but you're bringing, and you call the able embodiment, there are people who have conditions, physical conditions, other conditions that maybe are limited, but can bring tremendous value to an organization, because any company would be delighted to have you, right? And you've obviously proven your wealth. How do you relate that to that in that situation? Because I know that's an area you do talk on. Are you seeing improvement there?
Absolutely. You know, there is improvement. It's not happening as quickly as some may like, but it is happening. And so the reason I love DEI, I'm actually the chairman of the DEI board for the city that I live in. And so I'm passionate about it. Some people think that DEI is not even relevant, or there was a recent social media post about Elon Musk talking against DEI for whatever his reasons were. And again, everybody has their opinion, right? So I like to say the reason I like DEI is because, you know, everybody wants their voices to be heard.
Right.
And I think that for a lot of years, many years, the disability community's voice has been very quiet. And I'm just using that as an example because it speaks to me specifically as a disabled minority individual. And so the same way that the homosexual community and the Black community and everyone wants their voices to be heard, I'm fighting for the Latino and the disability community's voice to be heard as well. And I'm not opposed to other voices being heard either when I say that, because again, that's against DEI, but I want everybody's voice. I feel like everybody has a voice, and I feel like everybody's voice should be heard. And I feel that we should have a society where everyone belongs, that no one is outcasted because of how they look or how they were born or how they have to function in life. I think that if you're a human being, then that means that I think it's what, like 80 million other sperm? You're already a winner, right? You were born a winner.
Right? A lot of losers out there. A lot of losers.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like if you're a human being and you have a voice and you have a sound mind, then you deserve to be heard. You deserve to have a seat at the table. And I always like to say that if there's no seat at the table, I bring my own seat. Right.
Taking two issues, usually it's just ethnically related or where somebody's from or there's an issue to it. And there's so much value, and you demonstrate that obviously, that there's just so much value that people can get from having diversity and bringing equity into the workforce and inclusion. So I think it's getting better. I think we have a long way to go. And, you know, the numbers, so economically, companies that are benefiting from it, so the reward is there. It shouldn't be that. It shouldn't be the reason why they're doing it. They should do it because it's the right thing to do. So it's just changing. A few more questions for you. What's the one piece of advice you'd give to someone who maybe feels stuck right now in their personal or professional life? If they get a chance, they can check out your story. We're going to have all that information in the show notes, but you're going to give them one thing that they feel stuck maybe on a personal level. And we all do it, different things. New Year, sometimes people are fighting with depression, maybe they're bad relationships, whatever the case is. What would that advice be?
Yeah, I would just tell them to get out of your comfort zone and get out of your own head. A lot of times we stay stuck in our own head with our own thoughts. And I like to use the analogy that, you know, I'm in a wheelchair, I'm sitting in a wheelchair, but how many people are out there that are sitting in their own thoughts all day long? And those thoughts aren't conducive of what they want their lives to be. And get out of your own head, get out of your comfort zone, and go out there and learn something new, right? Maybe learning something else outside of what you're already good at doing is going to help you build that extra piece of confidence that you need to start moving in a new direction. Or maybe it's the same direction, but with new information now that you can bring to the marketplace or add value to somebody's life. And so I'm all about the three pillars that I have in life. Is I'm always trying to help people learn more, do more, and become more. Because when you learn more, you're going to do more. And by doing more, you become more. And so if you can follow that process, it's going to help you tremendously. I like to say that a lot of times in life, you may get stuck. We may have to go over speed bumps, but you don't have to park there. You can push it over. Sometimes you can just rev the engine again and get it moving. And that's all you need in life. So maybe if you're stuck right now, it's a new year. Most people are excited. But like you said, some people may be thinking like, oh man, is this year going to look like last year or the year before? I want this to be different. So what are you going to do to make it different? Because at the end of the day, the ball is in your court. No one is going to be able to drop success on your lap. No one's going to be able to drop confidence on your lap or motivation on your lap. I always tell people that they call me motivational, inspirational speaker. I'm cool with those titles, but what I like to say is I'm just a messenger of hope. Because at the end of the day, if I'm the motivational speaker and I'm coming in, when I leave, the motivation leaves with me.
Yeah.
Right? How are you going to stay self-motivated, or how are you going to be inspired after I'm gone? That's the important question. How are you going to do that? Like, I can sit here on a call with you for an hour or somebody for 10 minutes. minutes. And after that, like, I'm contagious, Mike. Like, anybody that comes around me for 5 to 10 minutes, they're walking away motivated and thinking differently. But after that, how can you keep that momentum going? You have to sustain that. And it's up to you. Like, you have to get involved. You have to put the work in. If that's watching YouTube videos or listening to Mike's podcast every time he drops a new episode with a new person giving new information and new revelation and new insight, what pieces of nuggets can you grab from that and incorporate into your own life that's going to make your life be the one that you really want it to be?
Excellent. Well said. Hey, so if there was a superpower for you, what would it be? I think we got a good indicator of what it is, but if you were going to have a superpower, maybe other than your motivation or your positive attitude to things, what would be your superpower?
Is mindset disruption. I want to help change people's minds, because if I can change people's ways of thinking, then that's going to mean that they're going to change their behavior. And that's the ultimate goal. Change your behavior and everything around you is going to change. So I have another mentor of mine by the name of Tim Grover. Those of you who don't know who he is, I would definitely recommend you check him out. He used to be the personal coach for Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, and a whole other plethora of athletes. He's out there right now killing the speaking industry, but he's a mentor of mine as well. And he said that when the mind decides, everything else follows. And I love that because it's so true. You have to make up your mind, what it is that you want in life, who you want to become, and what you want your life to look like. And once you answer those questions, you start to create a plan and a roadmap on how you're going to make those things happen and how you're going to get there and how it's going to become a reality in your life. Because I'll be honest, Mike, I never thought in a million years I'd be doing what I'm doing now, which is just speaking and sharing my story and my expertise and making an income and impact from it. And I live a very fortunate lifestyle nowadays. And it's because I got out of my comfort zone. I got out of my head. I got rid of my stinking thinking. And I said, what can I do to live the life of my dreams? And then I started following people who are living the life that I wanted to live, like Les Brown and Eric Thomas and Inky Johnson and all of these other speakers. And I'm like, what are they doing? I need to copy that. I need to figure it out. Yeah. And that's how it works. You follow the people that are doing it, that are successful. And then all you do is you add your own personal flavor to it, because everybody has a different seasoning, I like to say.
That's your uniqueness, right? Looking for your uniqueness in that sea of sameness, so to speak. So that's a good superpower. What would be the Achilles heel? What's your kryptonite?
My kryptonite, man, is, you know, just being stagnant. Like, I can't stay still. I'm never satisfied, in other words. I always want to look for something else and look for more. How can I grow in this area? How can I grow in this area? What can I do that can help my business grow? How can I increase my following? How can I increase my influence? So I'm never staying still.
You're not satisfied with status quo. Yeah.
Exactly.
I get that.
I'm tired of average, man. I lived average for so many years and it didn't get me anywhere, man. And so after I realized, once you're exposed to a new level of insight and enlightenment, it's almost like, not only do you not want to go back, you can't go back, because now you've been exposed to this new level of information and the new level of opportunities and possibilities. And there's always levels to this. So even when you thought you've made it, you've never made it.
No, good point. Hey, if you want to live and be indispensable, you want to recognize your own uniqueness, if you want to believe in what's possible, if you want to find your purpose and your potential, overcome your fears, learn how to show up in your environment, turn your weaknesses into wins, read Don't Let Your Struggle Become Your Standard. Hey, great book, great conversation. Jose, real pleasure having you, man. And now you're working on a new project. You and your wife are working on a new project. Tell us quickly about that.
Yeah, man. Thanks again for having me. And I appreciate the opportunity. But my wife and I just finished writing a marriage book called What Real Love Looks Like, How to Have It All, Even When You Don't Have It All. And when you see the cover of the book, it's going to blow your mind. We're doing a curriculum with that. And then in 2024, we plan on doing marriage conferences, marriage seminars, and marriage retreats, cruise retreats, marriage cruise retreats, and things of that nature. So definitely follow me on social media at Jose Inspires on every platform. Check out my website, joseinspires.com. I'm pretty sure Mike will have all that information in the show notes. Just wanted to say that out there. And then also, as another token of appreciation, Mike, I just wanted to give all your audience listeners a free gift, no strings attached. They just go to freegift.joseinspires.com. And it's just a motivational talk that I gave on the power of showing up.
Awesome. I really appreciate it, Jose. And like you say, how do you leave today and leave this conversation without being motivated? And we have to do that as our part of our job. But it's like you said, who motivates the motivator? So I think Les Brown said it, where you're definitely a motivational force and you're a force in general. So thanks for being. Thanks for taking the approach that you did. And thanks for sharing some of your time and your insights with us, Jose. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you. Have an amazing year.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.